Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Brex and Lab. Yes, despite all of your very hateful and hurtful comments in the YouTube section, we are back with the wireless mics, but at least, Brex, we're sharing the one shot once again. This is supposed to be an instant reaction podcast because we're sitting here on early Thursday evening and they just released the pairings for Friday's foursomes actions beginning at 7:10 a.m. Eastern Time on USA. It is going to be Bryson DeChambeau and Justin Thomas against the European team of John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton. Your thoughts, please.
Well, certainly you understand where Luke Donald was coming from. I thought our colleague Aaron Hoffhauser did a brilliant job today of breaking it down that if somehow, some way, Luke Donald does not send Hatton and John Rahm out again, he must have lost his mind. So I think we all kind of agree, as only AO could say it. And I know you have a different opinion. I know a lot of folks that work at the Golf Channel have a slightly different opinion when it comes to Bryson DeChambeau. His foursomes record is simply awful. There's no way around it. He was 0-2 in foursomes play. He's played and lost with Phil Mickelson. He's played and lost with Tiger Woods. He didn't even play foursomes in 2021. It gives you an idea. They didn't even want to trot him out. 2019 President's Cup, only time he's ever played the President's Cup. Didn't even play foursomes play. Why? Tiger Woods was the captain. I can tell you why. Because he knew that he's not good for that format. I'm not passing judgment on Bryson as a player. Certainly as a person. There are a lot of world-class players that don't particularly like that format. It's weird. It's different. Some people just don't fit. He doesn't fit. And if you could give me a reason why everyone seems to think, no, Bryson's different this time around. He's older. He's more mature. Maybe they play foursomes on LIV Golf, which they absolutely do not. Then maybe I could come around. But there is nothing different about this man now than it was 2 years ago or 4 years ago.
Okay, I'll give you many reasons why I like Bryson DeChambeau playing in the foursomes. First of all, the only time he has played foursomes in the Ryder Cup, again, as you mentioned, was 2018. He played with Phil Mickelson at a golf course in the Golf National, which was clearly going to be a terrible fit for that foursomes duo. Also, he played with Tiger Woods that week. He was dead tired after winning the Tour Championship the previous week, did not have his game, as it was evident, not just with Bryson DeChambeau, but also Patrick Reed in that partnership as well. Also, 7 years ago is an eternity in
professional golf.
Literally everything about Bryson. At that time in 2018, he was a position-oriented golfer who was of average length. What is Bryson DeChambeau now? Indisputably, the longest hitter on either side at the U.S. or for the Europeans. I love Bryson DeChambeau this week because of the golf course. You could argue that no player is a better fit for this golf course than him. Everyone has mentioned the draw bias that a number of holes are going to be. It's going to be very interesting to see whether Bryson DeChambeau tees off on one, which is going to be a fading hole, or whether he tees off on two, which is going to be a drawing hole. You look at Bryson DeChambeau's shot shape, it is primarily very hard, very high draws. Will the U.S. resist the temptation to put Bryson out there for the spectacle of trying to drive the first green? It's very unlikely he could do so at 7:10 a.m. Eastern time anyway. It's supposed to be a little bit cooler, supposed to be potentially foggy. If he hits it 30 or 40 yards short, is that much of an advantage? Or would you just rather have Justin Thomas put the ball in the fairway and Bryson DeChambeau attack from there? I do like Bryson. However, I think actually the biggest risk for Captain Keegan Bradley in putting out that duo first is not necessarily Bryson DeChambeau and sort of the unknown with alternate shot. I actually think it's Justin Thomas, who does not drive the golf ball particularly well, also has shown a little bit of an inability this year to get on certain sort of runs. Although his wedge play is excellent, other parts of his game are a little bit lagging, and his form has not been great over the past couple of months. If this partnership does not work out, if Bryson DeChambeau and Justin Thomas lose in that opening session, again, going against one of Europe's most formidable duos in John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton, I do think the leash could be short for that duo. Would not surprise me to see Bryson and Cameron Young, who also play the same golf ball as Bryson DeChambeau and Justin Thomas do, see that duo out on Saturday morning.
And they also hit the ball the same distance. I think Cam Young was always going to be a pretty good match when it comes to Bryson DeChambeau, and I think he would actually feed off of Bryson's energy. Cam Young is a low-energy guy, could probably use a little high-energy guy, and I think that's where Keegan Bradley, the captain of the U.S. team, is going with this. Send Bryson out early. Let's see if he can get the crowd excited. Let's see if he can get the crowd behind.
So I've been hearing that all week. Send Bryson out first and get the crowd going.
Because statistically, I just broke it down. He should not be playing foursomes. Certainly not foursomes first thing out on Friday morning. Because, again, you're referring to a new different player. Show me on paper. I'm going to have to see it before I agree with that assessment, because you're just assuming, oh, he's a much more complete player now. He's much more controlled.
That's inarguable. He is.
I don't think it is. I think you're absolutely wrong. I would argue against that.
He's hitting it 35 yards longer on average than he did in 2018.
I will give you what happened when he went 0-2 with Phil and Tiger, because you're right. There was some extenuating circumstances. He probably shouldn't have been on that team simply because of the way they had that golf course set up. I keep going to 2021 and 2019. There's a reason why those captains never even gave him a chance. There's a reason why those two captains saw something in him and realized, nope, that's not going to work. That was 2021. That was only 4 years ago. That was not a decade ago.
No. However, analytics has evolved. Bryson DeChambeau has evolved. And this golf course in particular, Bethpage, with just 2-inch rough, being very soft, very sloppy, fairways and quarters.
You're
are
also
essentially
putting
going to
them against a buzzsaw.
I understand that. What I don't understand is sort of thinking, well, you got to send out Bryson first, get the crowd into it. Dude, the crowd's going to be into it regardless. This is the Ryder Cup. These people have been starved for high-level competition, have not had the PGA here in 6 years. Everyone loves Bryson. I don't think he necessarily needs to hit the first tee shot in order to get these people absolutely insane. What if he blows it off the map? All of a sudden, then the air is let out of the balloon.
No, and I don't think it's just the first tee shot, because you're right. I mean, even under perfect conditions the other day, he never was able to drive the green. It's not going to be perfect conditions on Friday morning when they tee off. I think it's the sustained energy that they think he can drag around the golf course to get the fans involved. I'm with you. The fans were going to be involved anyway. And again, I keep coming back to, I'm fine with Justin Thomas. I see what you're saying. He's not driving the ball as well as you would have liked. I get it statistically why you think those two would make a good alternate shot pairing.
Yeah.
Between Bryson
hammers it and JT wedge.
JT's wedge game. I get that. You can add those two things together. This might be one of those situations where you let the statisticians step in a little bit too much.
we're gonna have to wait and see. I do think it's certainly a risk.
That's good analysis on you.
I think it's a risk what they're doing, but I think it's a risk that could pay off. Bryson DeChambeau is one of America's best players. You just can't pigeonhole him or shoehorn him into just playing four balls. He's too important. The golf course setup is too perfect. All right, moving on to match two, which will be kicking off at 7:26 a.m. Eastern time. Scottie Scheffler, Russell Henley. No surprise there. We talked about that in the preview podcast. Going up against what I would argue is a little bit of a surprise, though, with Ludvig Åberg and Matt Fitzpatrick. It's the first time we've seen that duo together. How do you sort of break this one down?
A little surprised on the European side, but I think you and I both talked about this on the Wednesday podcast. The idea that Luke Donald had all of these built-in pairings that he could fall back on from Rome, and you could sit and argue Hatton and Rom were easy. Tommy Fleetwood and Roy McIlroy are easy. We all knew that was going to happen, but we also kind of acknowledged that he's going to tinker with the other ones because Åberg and Hovland played so well together, but I will say those two players have evolved. Those two players' games are in a little bit different position right now, so clearly there has been something that he's seen. I'm not going to question Luke Donald on this front, however, because I think, one, he has those built-in pairings. Like, I'm sure he goes into those pairings looking at the way they matched up, thinking to himself, yep, I like where our guys are at.
When we just talked about Bryson DeChambeau being an eternity since 2018, 7 years, 2 years, Luke Donald is quick to point out, is a very long time for golfers to evolve as well. Splitting them up, both Luke Donald and the chief statistician, Eduardo Molinari, a former European Ryder Cup himself, it was led to believe that that would be the best and for the strongest pairing, splitting up those two, thus benefiting the other players. Matt Fitzpatrick is the other player. I think everyone was going to expect Ludvig Åberg because of his driving prowess on this golf course. Matt Fitzpatrick was sort of a player who I think as of the spring, right around the Masters, would have been an afterthought, this European Ryder Cup team. He was as lost as he's ever been, made the switch to swing coach Mark Blackburn. He has actually trended as well as anybody on this European team, just a string of top 10s, top 15s to secure his place among Luke Donald's top six captain's picks. Luke Donald just saying in a press conference just a moment ago, he really likes the mixture of games between Ludvig Åberg and Matt Fitzpatrick to fit this golf course. I think that'll be a very, very competitive match for high-level players, particularly against what is the strongest American duo, in my opinion, of Scottie Scheffler and Russell Henley.
And I would give Keegan Bradley credit on that front. Like, we're going to pick apart these pairings and have to wait to see how they do play out on Friday. Wait and see, as you would like to say. However, I think sending what is your strongest pairing, in this particular case, clearly that's Henley and Scheffler, off second also sets a tone that the idea could have been that let's put him in the last match as an anchor match, make sure that if things don't go well in those first three matches, that maybe we can salvage the session that way. I think it's a show of force. The idea that we'll send our best out in the second group and maybe get a point on the board.
Match three, Colin Morikawa and Harris English, the American duo, versus a powerhouse duo, two of the four best players in the world, Rory McIlroy and Tommy Fleetwood. No surprise there. A little bit of a surprise it was in the third match, not the anchor match, the fourth and final match for the Europeans. That's typically where Rory and Fleetwood have gone. How do you see that one sort of shaking out?
That shows part of the sort of the uniqueness of the Ryder Cup when it comes to being captains. Because unlike the President's Cup, where you can do a match-for-match thing going down when you're making these pairings, when you're a Ryder Cup captain, you just have to throw them out and hope you got them right. My guess is Luke Donald knew exactly what he was doing by throwing that particular twosome as powerful as they are out. Look, that you fully expect Tommy Fleetwood and Rory McIlroy to earn at least 4 points this week, maybe even five, based on the way they played in the past.
Both of them?
Are you, well,
they only need 14.
I know. But when you look at what they have done as a pair in the past, when you look at what they've done this season, Tommy Fleetwood winning on the PGA Tour for the first time, there's a new level of confidence, as if he couldn't become even more confident. I like all those things. And based on what I said about statisticians in the previous pairing, I'm going to go the other way on this one. I had gotten a heads up on this one that they were going to put Harris English alongside Colin Morikawa. And when you break it down statistically, it makes good sense in alternate shot. Here's how you break it down. Harris English is 46th on the PGA Tour this season off the tee and 13th in putting. Colin Morikawa is third in approach play. All you have to do is kind of space those out and make sure. Actually, the one stat that stood out to me with Colin was he's 19th in approach play from 150 yards to 175. That's probably what you're going to have a lot at Bethpage. So on paper, I like those two a lot. Unfortunately, on paper, the other two look so much better.
I'm with you there. Unfortunately, I think this one could be quite lopsided. I think when you look at Colin Morikawa, he was not going to play four balls. He was not going to play better ball. First of all, he's a below average length on a golf course that is really sloppy, really soft, really slow, and really wet. So if you have to play him in alternate shots, so you have to play it. You have to find a partner for him that will sort of maximize his gifts. I do think they found that in Harris English.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're going to be running up against what is indisputably Europe's strongest team, again, with two of the four best players in the world. I do think that point is for Europe. We'll get to that in a second. All right, finally, not a huge surprise here with Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay, the final anchoring duo for the Americans, going up against a new pairing. We just mentioned Ludvig Åberg having a new partner. Victor Hovland's new partner is Bob McIntyre. What do you think of that one?
I mean, everything hinges on Xander. And I'm not even referring to this particular match. I'm not referring to Friday's foursomes. I'm not referring just to Friday. I would say all of America's hopes hinge on Xander Schauffele.
Wow.
I don't think that's an overstatement, because
feels like one.
If you're Keegan Bradley, you're coming into this week feeling really comfortable with what you have in Scottie Scheffler and Russell Henley. You feel like maybe you can connect some dots and put some pieces together. We just had a long conversation about why Colin Morikawa and Harris English might be a good foursomes pairing. However, if this was last year at this time, Keegan was probably thinking to himself, well, at least I have two power pairings, one of those being Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay. Xander's coming off his worst season on the PGA Tour. He hasn't hit a meaningful shot in 48 days. He just celebrated the birth of his first baby. He didn't go to the training session at the Pro Court. You just don't know what you're going to get. And there have been signs that Xander's game is coming around. But do you want to try to cultivate that under these conditions? Do you want him standing on the most intense first tee that you can imagine in all of golf, thinking to himself, maybe I got it, maybe I don't? That's a very tough position. And I think it's not an overstatement that as Xander goes, I truly believe the rest of the American team goes.
I think at this time last year, you would have anticipated that Xander Schauffele was going to play four, maybe five matches. I'm not so certain
maybe not
this week that maybe he doesn't even play more than three, depending on what we see potentially in the Friday morning pairings. And there's some thought that, look, do you want a player to be hitting half the shots if you're rusty, or do you want to have sort of the rhythm of an entire round to get into it?
Yeah.
You know, you can make your six or seven birdies, and you can offset that with some of the mistakes. I do think that this might not be a week-long partnership with Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay. Keep in mind, those two players went 0-2 together in Rome in foursomes last year at the President's Cup. They only played one match together in that alternate shot format. So I don't think this is necessarily a shoe-in that you could just book them like you did in 2019 or 2021. Just sort of send them out and let them go. When you look at their opponents this time in Bob McIntyre in Victor Hovland. And why is Rory and Fleetwood potentially in the third match? It might be to give Victor Hovland more time to get ready. Because Victor Hovland, if you guys did not catch the viral clip that went on him before they had the opening ceremony on Wednesday, Victor was talking about his game, and he was bragging sort of nonchalantly to his teammates that, yes, I just had the best rain session that I've had in 2 years. And Shane Lauer's reaction was, F yes, and he gave him a hug. Everyone was really excited. Victor Hovland spoke to the media on Thursday. He confirmed that, yes, he found something on Wednesday. He was very curious to see if it could continue on Thursday. You and I have both done that before. Got a swing feel. Works fine. Go out and try it out. I wonder if putting Victor Hovland in that last pairing is just Luke Donald's way of saying, let's see what you got this morning. Make sure you have a little bit more time to ingrain those sort of feels.
And I'll go the other way a little bit on Robert McIntyre, because I think he has had a brilliant year. He's had just a breakthrough year when you look at what he's been able to accomplish. He seems very, very comfortable this time around in this setting. I think last time around he was not in Rome, having never done this before. And maybe when you show up to those team rooms for the first time, you're not exactly sure if you fit in. It's an entirely different scenario now. The one thing that gives me a red flag when it comes to Bob McIntyre is we know what happened at the BMW Championship, where he kind of got in the crowd's face and the crowd kind of got in his face and he voiced his displeasure about it. And I don't know that I can think of a worse thing to do than to come off a golf course in New York City and complain about the fans, because it's only going to be jet fuel for the fans to come back at you even more. So he's going to hear things that he doesn't like. That's not an if. That's an absolute thing that's going to happen. They're going to go after him, and the way he responds to it is going to be telling.
Yeah, I think that's sort of one of the big themes for the week. And Rory did a good job of talking about that today, that you have to strike the right balance of being engaged with the fans while also sort of staying true to yourself. You look what happened with Rory in 2016. He went absolutely berserk in that match against Patrick Reed, ended up flaming out, ended up losing that point. 2021, conscious of what had happened in 2016, he sort of shielded himself from that, did not really engage with the fans. What happened? He said he felt really flat, ended up going 0-3 in team play, and really felt like he let his team down. So I think a Rory, I think a John Rahm, a Tyrrell Hatton, a Bob McIntyre, all of those fiery players are going to be really balancing that for the remainder of the week. I sort of poo-pooed Victor Hovland, did not mean to do so. There is a reason why he is playing in the alternate shot format. He is one of the very best players on that European side, particularly with his irons.
I think he's fine.
But particularly with his irons from 175 to 225 yards, there is no player on the PGA Tour who is better than Victor Hovland. So I think when you zoom out, Rex, and you look at those eight players, what really stands out to me on the European side is those are your best ball strikers. That is strength on strength on strength. I think you can quibble a little bit with what Keegan Bradley has done. So when you zoom out, how do you sort of see the opening session going?
I think you and I were having a conversation earlier with someone from the European Tour, and they mentioned they feel like it's going to be 3-1 Europe tomorrow. And my comment was, I think Keegan Bradley would be okay with that. That's not a best-case scenario, but when you look at what happened in Rome, when the United States got swept on Friday morning, and then they ended up going 1-7 in foursomes play, it's probably not an absolutely terrible start. And as we just broke down all four pairings, I think both of us probably land on something close to 3-1.
I'm with you. I think this is 3-1 Europe, and I think that would sound some alarms if you're Keegan Bradley. Keep in mind, I heard what you just said, but in 2016, the Americans swept their opening foursome session 4-0. Mm-hmm. In 2021, they went 3-1 up, so establishing an early lead, getting the crowd into it, making it very hostile, making it very antagonistic, making it very hard for Europe to overcome an early deficit. I think that's one of the game plans for both of these teams, is getting out to an early start, either taking away the crowd or having them at full roar, particularly if you're the Americans, with President Trump expected to be on that first tee for the afternoon session.
I think the idea of taking away the crowd is unrealistic, because even if the U.S. team gets swept, and like, look, the New York crowd could easily turn on the U.S. team. We've talked a little bit about this. That's certainly a possibility with Stipe Gate and everything else that's transpired this week, but I don't think the crowd's going away. They're going to be there, and they're going to be pro-USA, regardless of what happens in that opening session. But anything close to that, and I, again, as long as it's not a sweep, if it's something around maybe 2-2, maybe 2.5-1.5, somewhere in that neighborhood, I think Keegan Bradley can at least walk in the team room and say, okay, boys, we're off to a start.
What do you think of the players who have been left out? Any surprises to you about the players, whether it's a Ben Griffin, a Justin Rose, who has historically been great in the foursome session? What do you think about the players who are going to be sitting out on that Friday morning? And do you think we're going to see everyone on the golf course on Friday? Luke Donald was non-committal when he asked if there was any scenario in which he could potentially be sitting a player all day on Friday.
I think there is a scenario where we don't see everyone on the golf course for either team. And I think both captains have done a good job. Certainly, we've talked a lot about Luke Donald and his attention to detail. And what's the Mike Tyson line? Everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. Someone's going to get punched in the mouth tomorrow morning. And if you get punched hard enough, that captain, I don't know, you're going back on live from?
God, I hope not.
I think one of those teams is going to get punched in the mouth tomorrow morning, and one of those captains is going to have to adjust. And I can certainly see a player, for whatever reason, maybe it has nothing to do with that player. It has more to do with the players around them. I'm not surprised by any one that Keegan sat. Three of the four rookies are sitting. I don't think it's a good idea to trot a rookie out in that particular foursome, which is the hardest game to play in all of golf, in that atmosphere. That was going to be a bad idea.
I'm just trying to think of the players who are sitting out. I wouldn't quibble at any of them on the American side in the foursome session. Ben Griffin, who is one of the most complete players on the PGA Tour, is fifth in strokes gained
total. Fault of his own.
But he plays a singular golf ball. He is the only player on the PGA Tour who plays that particular brand of golf ball. That was always going to be very difficult. I would expect to see a Bryson DeChambeau, Ben Griffin four balls matchup in the afternoon. I like that very much. JJ Spahn, I think you could potentially see with Scottie Scheffler in the afternoon four balls. And I actually think you're going to see Sam Burns play with Patrick Cantlay in four balls, Cam Young, Justin Thomas potentially, depending how that one goes as well. On the European side, I'm not quite as convinced that you're not going to see all of those players on the golf course. You look at Justin Rose 2 years ago, he was sort of hand-holding with Bob McIntyre, played exclusively in four balls despite always being a better foursomes.
They also only have one rookie.
Correct. Rasmus Højgaard, one of the longest hitters on the PGA Tour or DP World Tour. You would expect to see him in four balls, sort of his expertise in that. With the pairing that did not play in the foursomes that did play 2 years ago in Rome was Sepp Straka and Shane Lowry. Two very good iron players, but two players who are both very below average in length. So they're either going to break them up. One, maybe Sepp Straka, who has not played in about a month's time, would not play at all. I think you could potentially see Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry play together in four balls. Sepp Straka, to me, is the biggest question mark if you are Luke Donald. Again, you have not seen him in about a month's time. Yeah. Had some personal matters going on at home. He, to me, is the player, potentially, Rex, who we do not see on Friday. All right, prediction time. We just talked about Friday. We went deep on Friday. But before the matches actually start, we should probably talk about who's going to win this thing.
I swear to Scottie Scheffler, if you say what you said on live from, I am going to punch you in the mouth. I swear to Scottie Scheffler. You did the most cowardly,
it's not cowardly,
sports writer thing I could absolutely. You are an American football fan, and you fell back on it's going to be a tie.
You know what you can do in the NFL?
Not tie.
You can tie.
Oh, you can tie.
You can
tie. No one wants to do
you
that.
You can't do it.
You know what you can't do in college football? Tie. They'll play 13,000 overtimes.
Trust me, Georgia Tech did last year, going to seven overtimes. I do believe that this is going to end in a 14-14 tie. I think when you look at the European roster construction, this is the best and the deepest they have ever had from the roster construction to the setup, which I think has neutralized some of the American advantage, as we talked about on the Wednesday preview podcast. When you look about sort of the preparation that Luke Donald has done, overturning every stone possible to make a difference this week, that has been phenomenal. However, you are going up potentially against the most hostile, most raucous, most rowdy American crowd we have ever seen in Ryder Cup history. To me, those two factors completely negate each other. I think this is going to end in a 14-14 tie. We have not seen one of those in the Ryder Cup since 1989. And if you're curious, if it doesn't end 14-14, Europe does retain the cup.
Again, very cowardly. Very surprising thing for you, of all people, to do. No, I'm not picking it to end in a tie. However, I will waffle a little bit and point out the obvious that 8 of the last 9 Ryder Cups have gone to the home team, most of those in a very commanding way. There is not a Ryder Cup problem. There's a home team problem if you want to start pointing out and picking apart exactly what's happened. And the one that didn't go the home team's way, we call that a miracle. Miracle at Medina. So I don't know how you can come up with another scenario. All those things being said, the European team, 11 of those 12 players, we know exactly who they are, we know what they are, and we know how well they can play. They did it in Rome in a very commanding fashion. Luke Donald, we know who he is, we know what he is, and he was a brilliant captain. Might go down as the best European or American captain of all time. I actually have a different scenario. If things play out this week in either your tie or Europe winning, I would make an argument that if somehow Luke Donald were able to do what some people think is the impossible, to become just the fifth European captain to win a Ryder Cup on American soil, that not only would he be the best captain, period, Europe or USA ever, it would also be the caveat that had it not been for LIV Golf, we may never have landed on Luke Donald. Because remember, he wasn't supposed to captain the team in Rome. That
they probably would have eventually got to him.
But no, yes. I have asked a European tour official about this. And they said, look, he was on the list, but it's a very real possibility they never would have gotten around to him. Because, I don't want to belabor this, this is going to be a story I'm going to work on next week, depending on how it plays out. Henrik Stenson was the captain in Rome. Luke Donald replaced him. This time,
Sergio here.
It would have been some combination of Sergio's, yeah, right. Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, G-Mac. Now you start getting into some others. You start talking about Justin Rose, and then Rory comes into the line. It would have become an issue of just running out of spots before Luke is too old to do it.
It would have been 76 years old.
It's a fascinating case study. Anyway, I digress. The idea that is such a good team, and it's led so well, and the attention to detail, and everything that we know about them, this will be close. I think it's going to be a half point, a point. It will come down to one of the last matches on Sunday, but I do believe the United States team wins.
It cannot come down to a half point. It has to be a full point. To 13 and a half. Again, the U.S. does need 14 and a half to win the cup outright. Can't wait to do it. You guys are the drill. NBCSports.com/golf is going to have all of our latest news, notes, and updates. Rex and I will be back on Friday evening for a complete breakdown of the opening round sessions. Again, alternate shot in the morning, best ball in the afternoon, rinse and repeat for Saturday. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Enjoy the first day of 45th Ryder Cup.